Okay, good evening, everybody. Let's begin by cultivating our motivation. Again, rejoicing that we have this opportunity to listen to teachings, that we have the human faculties that can understand them, that we have the interest in the Dharma, and a sincere aspiration. And so let's make a strong determination to really make good use of this time and listen and think about the teachings attentively without spacing out or daydreaming. And let's remember that we're doing this not simply because there's nothing else to do on Thursday evening, or because we want to learn something interesting, or because all of our friends are listening. But let's really cultivate a strong wish to free ourselves and all others from cyclic existence, and to attain all the qualities of a fully enlightened being, so that we can bring that about. Let's keep that final destination, that long-term motivation in mind, as we make our life meaningful moment by moment by listening and contemplating the teachings. So, we've been doing mind training like rays of the sun by the Tibetan author Namkhapel, and we've spoken about the preliminary practices, which in the case of the thought training, it means precious human life, impermanence and death, karma and its effects, and the disadvantages of cyclic existence. And then we've gotten into the basic practice so far, which has been training the mind in the mind of enlightenment, training the mind in bodhicitta. So we just completed the section that, where's my outline here? Okay, where we talked about exchanging yourself with others through acknowledging the faults of selfishness and the advantages of concern for others. So remember that all those teachings where self-centered mind got beat up pretty badly? Yeah. And then we thought also not only about the faults of self-centeredness, but about all the benefits of cherishing others and caring for others. And so this is the complete opposite of the normal way we think about things, which is, let's cherish me and ignore everybody else. Yeah. Or pay attention to everybody else if they please me. Okay. But instead, this is really cutting down all of those barriers and really seeing everybody as wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And so wanting to help them equally to the point where when we talk about exchanging self and others, we're not saying I become you and you become me and, you know, I get your bank account and you get mine. It's not like that. It's talking about who we cherish, because right now we cherish ourselves above all others. And when we exchange self and others, then we come to a point where we cherish others even more than ourselves. And so this mental state is a very joyful mental state. If you're doing this meditation and then you think, oh, I have to cherish others more than me, and it's going to be so painful, and I'm going to lose out on everything, but I better do it. If you're thinking like that, then you haven't done the meditation properly. Okay? And I say this because lots of times, you know, we can do a contemplation and you know, come to the right conclusion, but our whole mood is foul. Yeah, and if you're in a bad mood after you've done a meditation like this, then for sure, you know, your process of meditation hasn't been correct. Because here, we really want to get ourselves to the point where we see that just, you know, clinging on to me, I, my, and mine, and getting our way all the time is really causing us misery. We want to reach a point of complete certitude. Well, we don't have any doubt about that. Once we have no doubt about that, then, you know, ignoring this self-centered mind is bliss. Yeah. But as long as one part of our mind is still hanging on, saying, well, I got to look out for my own benefit, because if I don't, I'm going to be miserable. As long as even one part of our mind is hanging on to that, then we're not going to be happy at the end of the meditation, and we're going to feel like it's a big chore to take care of others. You know, all these unworthy sentient beings, I've got to take care of them because this book says I got to do it in order to become Buddha. You know, if you have that feeling inside your heart, it's not going to work, is it? So we really have to think about these things very deeply. That's why it takes some time to change the mind. Okay? But it's a good practice in our daily life to just be aware, you know. And like between last week and this week, we've all had problems, right? Yeah, big, small, nothing's gone the way, well, maybe a few things have gone the way we wanted. But by and large, there's a number of things that haven't happened the way we wanted them to happen. You know, the more we hang on to that, oh, it was supposed to happen this way, and these people didn't do that, and they did this instead. They don't appreciate me. They don't respect me. Who do they think they are? Yeah. As long as we hold on to that, are we happy? No, we're miserable. Who's creating the misery? We think it's the other people, but this event has long since gone. It's over. But our mind is hanging on. So who's creating the misery? Yeah, self-centered mind. I want some acknowledgement of how much I suffered due to their actions. You know, just, I mean, come on, apologize. Doesn't no skin off your back to apologize to me, and I feel so much better. But if we ever apologize to the other person, no way. Okay, so do you see, you know, how the self-centered mind works, and it just makes so many problems and unhappiness in our mind. So when we really become convinced of that, then, you know, the door opens to really change who we cherish, and seeing the benefits of cherishing others, seeing how kind other sentient beings have been to us, then all we want to do is do things that are a benefit to them. Yeah. So it takes a while to get there, but I think it must be a very free state. Yeah, don't you think so? You know? Where when something happens, so the first thought isn't, how am I going to protect myself? How am I going to protect my ego? How am I going to make sure that I'm okay in this situation? It must be so freeing to not have that be our first thought. Okay? So we're working on it. Now we've come to the second part of the outline, which is actually cultivating the bodhicitta, the awakening mind, concerned with the interests of others. So here we're actually, before we were exchanging self and others, now we're going to cultivate that bodhicitta mind. Okay, so The book says this has two sections. One is taking the practice to heart in the context of an actual meditation session, and second is what to do after the meditation session. Okay? And within the first, what to do in your meditation session, there's the meditation on love, and then there's the meditation on compassion. Okay? So now we're going to talk about the meditation on love. And so here we get one of the lines in the 7-point thought transformation, okay, which is the root verse, and everything I'm reading here is the commentary. So the root verse says, practice a combination of giving and taking. Okay, so this is a special meditation called Tong Len. Tong means to give, Len means to take. Okay, so what we are giving is love and our body, our possessions, our virtue, and what we're taking is suffering. Okay, so this is based on exchanging who ourself and others, who we care most for. Okay. So again, it's very different than our normal way. Our normal way is if there's love and happiness, I'll take it. If there's suffering, you can have it. Right? You know? And we do this any way we can get out of the smallest thing that we don't want to do. Okay? Yeah, we come up with all sorts of extravagant reasons why we can't do something. Okay. But we don't mind other people doing it at all. You know, even if they're unhappy doing it. So we're again reversing that attitude and learning to take suffering and give happiness. So here it's starting off with the meditation on love, where we're giving happiness and the causes of happiness. When you do the practice, I think I find it more effective to start out with the compassion part, where you're taking the suffering, because until I take on others' suffering, giving them happiness doesn't do much good, it seems. Okay? Though maybe other people find it the other way works okay. Okay, so Namkapal says, when we meditate on love, and love is the wish for sentient beings to have happiness and the causes of happiness. So, actually, that gets into a whole discussion about what is happiness. Doesn't it? Yeah. And we think we know what happiness is. But do we? Do we really know what happiness is? Because our present view of happiness, if we want to give happiness to others, we think of giving nice food, a nice place to live, a vacation, you know, a partner, a trophy, your name in the newspaper, you know, all these things that we commonly think of in the world as things that make people happy. So we think of giving those. And that's nice to give all of those. But how long does the happiness last from receiving those? Yeah, we ate lunch. How long did your happiness last from eating lunch? Okay. Maybe we had a pleasant time chatting with somebody today. How long did that last? Yeah. Or we took a walk in the woods and it's so beautiful, or we looked in the flower garden and it's gorgeous. How long did that happiness last? Okay. So it was pleasure, but it doesn't last very long. So when we're thinking about providing happiness for sentient beings, happiness and its causes, we want to look beyond just short-term happiness, you know, and to think about Dharma happiness. And what about wishing that people were free of anger? Okay. Or wishing that they were free of their own self-centered mind. Not just so they would be nice to us, but because their self-centered mind makes them suffer. What about wishing that they would be free of attachment? Yeah. How about somebody who's very attached to you and you want them to be attached to you, but you wish that they're free of attachment because you know that attachment causes misery? Do we really care about somebody enough to do that? Okay, so here we want to really think about long-term happiness that comes through changing the mind through Dharma practice. Okay, so of course providing, you know, a nice walk and a new car and, you know, these things for sentient beings, but also thinking, you know, may I be able to give them the Dharma teachings, you know, or wouldn't it be wonderful if they were free of jealousy, yeah, or free of arrogance, free of craving, yeah. So really think about, you know, what would actually make sentient beings happy. Wouldn't it be wonderful if their minds were endowed with equanimity so that they didn't have favorites? Can we think that for somebody who we're attached to, who we want to be attached to us? May their mind be endowed with equanimity so that they don't think we're special? Self-centered mind's getting a little itchy, isn't it? Doesn't like things like this, you know. But if we think, you know, what does wishing happiness mean? Yeah, are you wishing happiness, you know, when you wish that somebody be horribly attached to you, terribly attached to you, and think that they can never live without you? Yeah, is that creating happiness in their mind? Yeah. Or, you know, are you creating happiness when you're wishing that your friends beat all their enemies, or that all their enemies get hurt, or whatever? You know? So what I'm saying is we have to really think, you know, what is our idea of happiness, and what is our idea of the cause of happiness? Because in 21st century society, now we think the cause of happiness is money. Everything gets boiled down to money. Okay. Yeah. Do those pieces of paper have the power in and of themselves to bring you happiness? You have it, you hold it. Are you happy? Yeah. Okay, so, you know, let's look really deeper at what wishing happiness for ourselves and for others really mean. Yeah, so we're not just thinking about the societal way. Of course, we include those pleasant things, but let's look deeper, you know, especially when we're developing love here. Okay, when we meditate on love by such means as giving away our bodies, possessions, and merit to others, we should first understand the benefits to be gained through doing so. You're going to say, wait a minute. When we meditate on love by such means as giving away our body, possessions, and merit to others, that's meditating on love? That sounds like meditating on self-sacrifice and suffering. I don't want to do it. That's what self-centered mind says, isn't it? I don't want to do it. Or if somebody gives away their body, possessions, and merit, I'll take it. They can give it to me. Yeah. I'll happily take it if somebody's so stupid to do this. But I'm not going to give away mine. Okay, we like that. Yeah. So this is why all these preceding meditations we need to do over and over and over again to really get this very stubborn, self-centered mind to change, so that we see benefit in giving away our bodies, our possessions, and our merit. very cute. One time, when I first went to Singapore, this was many years ago, one man came and he wanted me to teach him how to meditate. And so I taught him, you know, a simple meditation practice. You know, start with motivation and refuge and so on, and do the practice. And then at the end, I came to dedicating. And I said, let's give away all the merit that we created through doing this practice. And in Singapore, you know, he was raised Buddhist, and so he had a strong feeling about merit. Merit wasn't this stuff that we Westerners kind of, you know, yeah, what's that? But he really believed in merit. And he looked at me and he said, I have so little merit, I don't want to give it away. You know, I mean, it was really touching because he really had this faith in merit, and he was so frightened about dedicating his merit for others. And so I had to explain that actually when you dedicate your merit, when you think of sharing it with others, you aren't losing it. It's not a fixed pie whereby if one person has it, the other person doesn't. Yeah. But rather, the more you give it, the more you create. So that kind of relaxed his mind a little bit. Okay. So we're going to look at the benefits, you know, that come through giving away our body, our possessions, and our merit. Then we will be filled with such a great eagerness to practice the actual techniques for activating love. Because whenever we see the benefits of something, then we get eager. You know, we become eager to practice. Okay, so now we're going to get the sales pitch. Yeah, but it's a good sales pitch. Yeah, and it's a lot more truthful than what we hear on the advertising industry here. Okay, so the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra says, were we to make as many infinitely huge offerings as the millions and billions of realms in the universe, and were we to offer them forever to the supreme beings, to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, it would not compare with a fraction of the mind of love. Okay? So if we were to make offerings, because making offerings is a big practice, you know, we do that. So if you were to make offerings, you know, to as many Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as fill millions and billions of universes and make these offerings forever, for a long time, the merit received from doing that is far outshone by the merit of just one moment of cultivating love. Okay. Now here, I think it means love when you're at the level of the jhanas, okay, the level of the dhyanas, the concentrations, because love is one of the objects that you can develop serenity on, okay? And since it's talking about the meditation on love, I think it's talking about love at the level of when you're actually in deep meditative absorption of at least the first jhana, the first meditative stabilization. Okay? So you can see that even one moment of that mind that's completely filled with love, with deep concentration, no distraction whatsoever, that's going to be a very powerful mind, isn't it? Okay? So I don't think it means our having love for one moment. Yeah. And also remember, love and attachment are very, very different. Yeah. Extremely important. Yeah. Because attachment is based on exaggerating other people's good qualities, and love is not. Attachment is based on we have strings attached. Yeah. I love you as long as you do. And we have our little list. Okay, when they don't do that, we don't love them. We get angry. Okay, whereas actual love, you know, is we aren't expecting anything in return. So that's a big, big difference, yeah, from attachment. And attachment is basically a setup for pain. Basically is, yeah? Because the more we exaggerate and have expectations, yeah, the more we're painting a picture on somebody that doesn't fit them, and the more pain we're going to experience when we realize that our picture, that they aren't what we thought they were. And then we blame them for not being what we wanted them to be. But we were the ones who had very false expectations. Okay, so the attachment's definitely a setup for pain. Whereas with love, it's just wanting someone to have happiness in its causes. And that's it. You know, they don't have to like me. They don't have to be nice to me. They don't have to appreciate me. They don't have to cherish me more than everybody else. They don't have to tell me they love me 3 times a day. You know, they just have to exist. That's it. Okay? So it's a very, very pure kind of love that isn't like our yo-yo emotions right now. Yeah. Our emotions are kind of like yo-yos, aren't they? Yeah. Okay. So the Buddha has said that the merit created through love is far greater than that derived from constantly offering objects of great value to Buddha fields across the far reaches of the universe. So that's how much merit it is. In the Sutra on the Adornment of Manjushri's Realm, it is said, in the northeast direction, which is said to be adorned by 1,000 realms of the universe of the extremely powerful awakened being Maheshvara, every sentient being experiences happiness like the bliss of those bhikshus who are absorbed in meditation on the cessation of suffering. Such good conduct extends over thousands of millions of years. Yet, were one person in our world to generate love for all sentient beings for even as long as it takes to snap his fingers, the merit he produced would be far greater. So what need is there to mention the value of abiding day and night in the meditation on love? Okay. So in the northeast direction, there's 1,000 realms of the universe, yeah, where this bodhisattva, Maheshvara, reigns. And there's sentient beings who have bliss that is comparable to a monk who is meditating on the true cessations. So that's a lot of bliss, okay? And yet, such good conduct, yeah, of providing happiness for sentient beings in this way, doesn't compare to the having the meditation on love, samadhi and love, for the length of a finger snap. Okay? So remember, this is at the level of samadhi. So it's a very deep, pure kind of love with no distraction. But that's, you know, it's so much more merit than this other one. Okay? And then the Precious Garland says, who wrote the Precious Garland?
Nagarjuna.
Okay. So Precious Garland says, even giving 300 delicacies 3 times every day to monastics would not equal a part of the merit of even one moment of love. Okay? So offering dana, especially offering food to the monastic community, is considered to create great merit, okay? But even offering 300 delicacies 3 times a day to the Sangha doesn't equal the merit of even one moment of love, you know, where you have the samadhi on love. Okay. Now, the next two verses in these, he's talking about the 8 benefits of love. So I'll read the verses and then go back. But you'll find these 8 benefits come up in several different texts. Okay. So you will be loved by gods, by celestial beings, and humans. And living beings will also offer you protection. You will experience mental happiness as well as bodily ease and comfort. And poison and weapons will do you no harm. You will effortlessly achieve your purpose and could be reborn in Brahma's realm. Even if you have not attained liberation, through love, the eight spiritual qualities are gained. Okay? So, here it says, you will be loved by celestial beings. That's the first benefit. Okay, so the devas, all the various devas of different realms will love you if you have a mind of love. Okay? So you know how we sometimes talk, I mean, we can feel the energy of different beings sometimes in our forest and in the way we share the land with others. If we have a mind of love towards them, they will reciprocate that. And other devas who also have regard for the Dharma also reciprocate it. Okay? And then the second is we will be loved by humans. So somebody who has this deep mind of love, you know, who meditates in samadhi on love, will be loved by other humans. Yeah, we see this, don't we? When we meet somebody who has a mind of love, everybody automatically likes that person and feels quite comfortable around them. Yeah. And I've seen so many examples of people who, they're not Buddhist, but they go to a teaching by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and His Holiness walks on stage, and they have no idea why, but they start to cry because they feel so moved. And I think that's by the force of His love, you know, that you feel that. And so it's like that with some spiritual masters. You can feel the love and compassion. You know, so automatically the mind, you know, we care about them in return. So this is a benefit that accrues to us if we develop the samadhi on love. Okay? And living beings will also offer you protection. So here it says, and they will also offer you protection, but the explanation is that even non-human beings will offer you protection. So let alone the devas and the human beings, but different spirits and so forth, you know, they won't harm, but instead they offer protection. Yeah, because you see that when somebody's kind, when somebody's very loving, people cherish that person and want to protect them. Okay, you will experience mental happiness and physical ease, physical comfort as well. Okay, so when you have attained the state of the jhanas, the dhyanas or meditative stabilizations, yeah, then you have this mental factor of pliancy, where you know you have both physical and mental bliss. Okay. And then especially you see, even in another way, not just because you have actualized jhana, but also because of the love, you know, even we can see in a basic way now, even though we don't have the samadhi, that when our mind is filled with love, our mind is happy, our mind is at ease, it's not filled with worry and anxiety, okay? And our body is also relaxed. Yeah, when our mind really has love, not attachment, okay? And see, here's where we get very, very confused, because we get attached to somebody, then we worry about them, we have anxiety if they're going to get hurt, and we think that's loving them. Okay? But we can see that we have neither mental happiness nor physical ease with that state of mind. So how, that's not loving somebody, is it? Okay? When you're so worried, are they going to get hurt? Are they going to be okay? Or this and that. You know, that's not love. And I really say this because one time I was talking with my niece. She was really little at the time. And we were writing a letter together. And I found out through how we were writing the letter that I miss you and I worry about you meant I love you. Yeah? And that's often how we feel in families, isn't it? You know, if I don't miss you, then I don't really love you. If I don't worry about you and I'm not anxious about you, I don't love you. You know, that's not the meaning of love. Okay? Because love is just wanting someone to have happiness and the causes of happiness. And there's no strings attached. Okay? So you can see when there's no strings attached, the mind is going to be joyful because the pleasure comes in just caring. Caring is a joyful mind. Okay? So when you have that caring, loving mind, the mind's going to be happy. And also the body isn't going to be all tensed up with worry and anxiety. It's going to be relaxed because the mind is happy and relaxed. Okay? So that, okay, so just so you get the numbers. Being loved by gods is one, by humans is two, being protected by non-humans is three, having mental happiness is four, and then physical ease and comfort is five, and then six is poisons and weapons will do you no harm. Okay, so wait a minute. How does love make it so that poison and weapons do you no harm? How does that happen? I think it must happen somehow by the force of the karma that you create, and also by the power of that loving mind. Because they say that the Buddha, on the eve of his enlightenment, when he sat under the Bodhi tree, then Mara sent all his warriors there to attack him and do everything, and to destroy the Buddha. And the Buddha generated an attitude of love towards them. And all those vicious warriors evaporated. In fact, their weapons turned into flowers that just kind of floated in the air, a rainfall of flowers. Okay? So the power of the loving mind can be very strong. The Buddha had one cousin who was very jealous of him, who was always trying to, you know, mess things up. And so his cousin one time tried to kill him by unleashing a mad elephant. Okay, they didn't have terrorists then, so. Well, maybe this was the ancient Indian view of terrorism. You unleash a wild elephant. And this elephant came, you know, enraged, just charging at the Buddha. And the Buddha just sat there and meditated on love. And as the elephant approached, it wound up falling on its knees in front of the Buddha, offering homage. You know, because he could feel the power of that loving mind. So I think, you know, there's something there. Have you ever been with somebody who has that kind of loving mind? And then you can see how it affects the other people around, so that weapons and, you know, those kinds of things don't affect the person. Okay, number seven, you will effortlessly achieve your purpose. So by developing samadhi on love, then you can take that samadhi and also use it to develop insight, so that you have the union of serenity and insight. Okay, and by having that unity of serenity and insight, and then focusing that on emptiness, you can use that to cleanse the mind of all defilements. And so in that way you attain your purpose, your goal. Okay? And then the eighth one is you could be born in Brahma's realm. Okay? So Brahma is one of the gods who's born in... Actually, there's many different levels of Brahma gods. They are born in the form realm. And so the form realm is where the beings have that, those are the jhanas, where they have that level of concentration. So if you cultivate the level, one of those levels of concentration, they say that you can attain up to the third jhana, with the meditation on love, then you could, if you don't develop wisdom, you could be reborn in, as one of Brahma's neighbors. Okay. So for people who seek a higher rebirth, they may be attracted to that. If we're seeking liberation and enlightenment, we're not attracted to that kind of rebirth. Okay? But it is a benefit of developing this samadhi and love. Okay? And even if you have not attained liberation, okay, through love, the 8 spiritual qualities are gained. So these 8 qualities are for those, who have not yet attained liberation. Right? So they're benefits of cultivating love. And you can just think in your own life, what would it be like just to have a constantly loving mind where your mind wasn't an emotional yo-yo? Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, wouldn't it be nice to wake up in the morning and not be in a bad mood because you had love in your mind? Yeah, wouldn't that be good? Wouldn't it be nice to walk into, your office or walk into, whatever you're doing and have a happy mind because the mind is loving? Wouldn't that be great? So, we can see this kind of benefit. And then that inspires us to cultivate love, doesn't it? Okay? So love, this kind of love isn't something that we just sit and wait to develop. Okay? It's something we have to actively cultivate. Okay? So if you have love, gods and humans will gather together under its force. Even the conqueror, the Buddha, defeated the malevolent forces of Mara through the power of love. Therefore, it is the supreme protection, and so forth. You might wonder about the source of the explanation for the meditation on love through giving away your body, wealth, and virtue. So we might say, well, love is one thing, but meditating on love through giving away my body, wealth, and virtue, what's the source of that? What's the scriptural source? Who said that? Okay. So he's saying it's to be found in Shantideva's Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life in the chapter concerning acceptance of the awakening mind in a formal ceremony. So that's chapter 3 of the text. When the ceremony of actual acceptance is over, in other words, where you've said the verses of taking the Bodhisattva vow, it's not when the actual ceremony is over. It says when the ceremony of actual acceptance is over, just before the actual pledges are recited. Okay, as the preceptor is describing the visualization of love and compassion, you should give away your body, possessions, and sources of virtue. So what this is that whole chapter, you're creating the merit to be able to take the Bodhisattva vow. So the verses just prior to taking the Bodhisattva vow are the ones that talk about giving away your body, possessions, and merit. Don't know why it says when a ceremony of acceptance is over. I'm not quite sure what that means. But it is just before the actual pledges, before you actually take the Bodhisattva vow. That's where the verses are. And actually, the verses are the ones, if you turn the page in the book, they're on page 62, so we're going to come to them in a few minutes. Okay? But these are the verses that are the source. Okay, so now we're at the next session, how to give your body possessions and virtue in general. Okay? So how to give them in general, the mind, how to do that. Now follows a general explanation according to the scriptures of just how we give away our body, possessions, and virtues. The purpose of giving them away is that in doing so, we will complete the 2 collections of merit and wisdom, and this is the reason why we should give them away. Okay? So the 2 collections of merit and wisdom, this is part of the Bodhisattva practice. Yeah? The collection of merit is done by accomplishing the method side of the path, and it's the predominant cause for the form body of a Buddha. And the wisdom, the collection of wisdom, is the wisdom aspect of the path, and it's the predominant cause for the truth body of the Buddha. Okay, so we need to create both method and wisdom, method and wisdom, to complete the collections of merit and wisdom, which lead to the form body and the truth body of the Buddha. Okay, so that's the purpose, why we need to give away our body possessions and merit. Okay. The guide to a bodhisattva's way of life says, I will give away without restriction my body possessions and the virtue I have produced in the three times to accomplish the welfare of all beings. Okay. So you can see, to be able to say this, you have to really feel in the depths of your heart that I want to accomplish the welfare of all beings. I really want to be able to accomplish that. And so, to be able to accomplish it, I will give away my body, possessions, and virtue of the three times, of the past, present, and future, without any restriction, without any anxiety, without any questionnaire that people have to, you know, fill out beforehand, without any guarantee or return policy or anything like that. Okay? So you can see here, this mind really, really wants to attain full enlightenment and to accomplish the welfare of others. And so when we have that genuine motivation, then giving away our body possessions and merit is not so difficult. In the meditation practice that we're doing, we're going to visualize giving away our body possessions and merit. Okay? Just even visualizing it is hard. We don't want to even think about it. Yeah? But give yourself a little space and try and think about it. We're not all talking, you know, we're not talking about going out tomorrow and, you know, giving your kidneys and your liver and your eyes and your heart and everything like that. Yeah? We're talking about cultivating the mind of love that wants to give. So that mind of love is available, and if sometime we have the opportunity to give, we will do it. Okay? From amongst these, it is generally inappropriate to give away the body. We go, oh, phew, now I have to give away my body. It says it's inappropriate. I'm off the hook. But the reason for it is, because the body consists of unclean substances such as flesh and blood. In other words, we get to hang on to this sack of junk because giving a sack of junk like this to sentient beings isn't the nicest offering to give them. Okay? Actually, for those who are eager to give away their body, okay, the way to do this is explained below. Okay, and this is why, and we're going to come here into one way of giving away our body where we imagine it, you know, multiplying, or we imagine it becoming a wish-fulfilling jewel and so forth. But the practice of truth, it's a tantric practice in which you imagine chopping your body up, purifying it so it transforms into blissful wisdom nectar, and then offering that to various spirits and demons because they like blood and guts and these kind of things, you know. Whereas normally we wouldn't give it because most people, you know, they really don't want your liver either in formaldehyde or out of formaldehyde, you know, unless they need a liver transplant. Yeah, then they would like it, but I don't think they want to really hold it in their hands. Okay, so if the body is to be given away, the array of tree trunk sutra says you should transform yourself into a wish-fulfilling body that sustains all wandering beings. Okay, so there's different ways to give away our body. Yeah, one way is by thinking of it as a wish-fulfilling body. In other words, a special kind of body that can radiate out whatever or make manifest whatever it is that sentient beings need. So if somebody needs blankets, your body can manifest that. If they need an iPod, you can manifest that. If, you know, they need a camera that works, they can manifest that. If they need, you know, things like that. They usually talk about the body as, you know, manifesting things that you give. But when I do the practice, I find it very helpful to think that I manifest bodies that are real people who become the people that other people need in their lives. Mm-hmm. You know? Because it isn't just that we're short of possessions. It's oftentimes people are short of the kind of help they need. So somebody may need a teacher, somebody may need a doctor, somebody may need some comfort from a friend. Yeah, somebody may need a helper to spray the knapweed. You know, you might need a lot of different, people might need a lot of different things, but to be able to manifest and become that person that somebody else needs when they need help. Okay, so I find that way very effective for me in terms of thinking of giving things away. Okay, giving away my body. So not just that it becomes the things that people need, or that I give away the heart and the liver, you know, but that I actually become somebody who can give the help and the service and the comfort or whatever it is that somebody needs at any particular moment. And I think that imagining it this way helps our mind get over the laziness and the resistance that comes up that when sometimes people ask us to help with something. Mm-hmm. You know how sometimes we're a little bit resistant. Oh, I did that yesterday. I want to do it today. So-and-so hasn't done it. Let them do it. And, you know, all that kind of thing. Yeah. That's why I think we listen to Master Shenyan, his video. He's one of the Chan masters in Taiwan who just passed away. And when he was saying, if you don't know how to do something, learn it. Remember? And do what other people don't want to do. Yeah? So those are actually, they fit very well here when we're talking about offering our body. You know, learn to do what, you know, if you don't know how to do something, learn it. That's what he said, wasn't it? If you don't know how to do it, learn it. And do what other people don't want to do. Okay? So that is, you know, part of giving away our body, becoming that kind of person who can do that, who can offer so much benefit to others. Mm-hmm. And the Sutra of the Vajra Victory Banner says, just as through various means and through various manifestations, the four great elements sustain all sentient beings, a bodhisattva transforms his own body so that it is the basis for sustaining all sentient beings. Okay? So just as the four great elements, earth, water, fire, and air, sustain all sentient beings, those are the four elements out of which everything in our physical universe is created, according to the ancient model. Okay, so just as these four qualities or these four elements sustain sentient beings' life, then may we transform our body in a similar way so that it can sustain other living beings' life. And so then we get the verses here from Gayatri Bodhisattva's way of life that talk about how to imagine doing it. And these are the verses that Nankapal was referring to earlier that describe how to give away your body, possessions, and merit. Okay, so the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life says, during the intermediate aeon of famine, may I become food and drink for sentient beings who are poor and famished. May I remain in their presence as various necessities. And may I protect those without protection and be a guide leading those upon the path. May I become a vessel, a bridge, and a ship for those who wish to cross over the ocean. May I be an island for those searching for land and a lamp for those needing a light. May I become a bed for those who need rest and a servant for all who want assistance. May I become accomplishing mantras and excellent vases, fabulous wish-fulfilling trees and great elements such as the earth. May I be the basis of sustenance for limitless sentient beings, existing eternally for them like space. In this way, just as all realms of sentient beings are infinite like the expanse of the sky, may I become the basis for their sustenance until they all attain the state beyond sorrow. Beautiful, isn't it? You know? And to really train the mind to think like that and aspire like that. So we'll go over those a little bit more next week. In the meantime, if you have Kenzo Jumpa Chepchok's book, Transforming Adversity into Joy and Courage, if you look at chapter 11, he unpacks this meditation in depth and does it in a very beautiful way. So I highly recommend that chapter. So we have time for a couple of questions.
Situation where if a person is in danger and somebody else steps in and moves them out of harm's way and they get harmed or killed. So is that a good example of that kind of a spontaneous where the love just...
Okay, so the question is an example of that spontaneous love when you see somebody about to get injured and you interfere, you intercede so that that person's okay and you might get hurt instead. You know, I would say so. Yeah. Of course, it's better if you can make it also so that you don't get hurt, because not just so that you don't get hurt, but so the other person doesn't create the negative karma of hurting you. Yeah. Yeah, because you want to care about everybody in this situation, so you don't want that person to create some negative karma. But that kind of spontaneous thing of stepping up to the plate when need be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You say that having negative afflictions is an unwavering karma from once you can be reborn in that state. What if that's not your purpose or intention and you're paying those dharmas in order to attain enlightenment, but you die maybe before you have the ability to direct the rebirth?
Okay. So they say that when you attain any of this as a human being, when you meditate and attain any of those jhanas, first, second, third, fourth, that it's unwavering karma that creates the form to be born in one of those realms. So your question is, what is if your real aim is enlightenment, but you die with one of those jhanas, but you haven't attained enlightenment? I think that because your motivation, you know, if you've been making strong prayers, may I have a precious human life, or may I be born in a pure land, yeah, but then because of the power of the prayers you've been making your whole life, that the karma would ripen so that you would get that kind of rebirth. Okay.
And we have a question about the meditation we do on love in the long and offline. Is it this? There, you know, we have the wish for the various levels of people to be happy and extend that out. But it seems like this goes way further than that.
Right.
So what's the relationship?
Okay. So the regular meditation on love that we do is starting with ourselves, wishing ourselves to be well and happy, and again thinking about what happiness means, then thinking about a friend. They usually recommend here, when you think about a friend, to think about your spiritual teacher, not to think about somebody of the opposite sex or somebody that you could easily get attached to. Okay? And then extend it to a neutral person, and then after that extend it to somebody who's hostile towards you. Okay? So that's how you develop love. Yeah? And so on that basis of having done that meditation to develop love, then your love becomes so strong that you do this practice of giving. Okay? In which you're imagining giving all of these things because you want them to have happiness in its causes. And then, because you do that meditation very well, then that will enable you to actually give. Okay? When the situation arises. And it will also give you that single-pointedness of mind that you can then use to attain the union of serenity and insight on emptiness, which can really benefit yourself and others. Okay? But you have to start with the basic meditation on love, first towards ourself, then, you know, a friend, neutral person, and an enemy. You have to start with that. Yeah. Otherwise, you just go to this abstract thing of I'm giving away my body and everything, but you have no feeling in your heart towards anybody else. Okay. So that's why in the previous section, we spent a long time talking about the benefits of cherishing others and the kindness of others, because when we see the kindness of others, then the mind feels affection towards them. So this section didn't start out with this meditation. Okay. There were the preliminary practices first and all these other things first. Okay. So we'll continue next week.
May the spiritual teachers lead me on the sacred path. And all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable. And their divine actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losung's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Dangara Ratna Mandala Yatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born up no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful gift of generosity, may it stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Atravastiya in the West Florida.